What's up, everyone? I'm Nick.
And I'm Em.
And welcome into the Ominous Archives. Before tonight's episode, I want to give a trigger warning, because this is definitely could be triggering. I would probably say it's not suited for anyone under 13. We're going to be covering a topic that's potentially disturbing to some, and it could also be triggering, as we are going to be talking about the topic of slavery, like a subtopic in tonight's episode. So if any of those gore or slavery, if anything that's triggering or turns your stomach easy, this is probably an episode to skip. If not, we're rolling into episode 34, and we're going to turn our eyes into one of the most haunted houses in America, if not possibly the world. It's a place where unimaginable cruelty once lived behind the elegance and wealth, and where that cruelty never really left. This is the story of the LaLaurie Mansion, a grand house in the heart of New Orleans, and the unspeakable horrors that was kept inside it.
Okay.
So, we're going to head on back to the early 1800s, where Marie Delphi McCartney, later known as Madame LaLaurie, was born on March 19th, 1787. She was born into one of the most powerful, privileged Creole families in New Orleans. Her father and her mother were descendants from French nobility. The McCartneys, I'm sorry, were aristocrats, slaveholders, and elites, such as military officers, planters, and merchants, with ties deep into both politics and property. From childhood, Delphi was taught that she was exceptional. She was raised with a silver spoon and this unshakable belief that she was entitled to power. Her moral compass was constructed around one thing, and that was control. And it would cost others dearly. So, at just 14, Delphi married Don Ramon de Lopez y Anglo.
What a name.
Yeah. Now we're talking 1801 at 14.
Yeah, that's crazy.
He was a high-ranking Spanish official. It was a prestigious match until he was summoned back to Spain, and on his return, he died at sea. And Delphi gave birth to their daughter, Borqueta, in Havana in 1805. So 4 years after they were married. So, little side note, she was 8.5 months pregnant when Don Ramon
left.
Had to go back.
That's so sad.
So he brought her with him. He was like, no, we're going to Spain. Yeah. She's like, I don't want to leave.
Right.
But more like, I'm 8.5 months pregnant.
Right.
And had the baby in Havana. I believe it was after he died.
Yeah.
So, widowed and wealthy, Delphi remarried in 1807 to Jean Blanquette. He was a successful merchant, banker, lawyer, and politician. He was also a slave trader and an alleged smuggler, with ties to the pirate brothers Jean and Pierre Lafayette. They together had four more children, but when Blanquette died in 1815, he left behind a mountain of debt. Something like $2 million in today's money.
Dang.
But Delphi, ever calculating, took control, as she did, and she managed to settle his estate, maintain her land, and keep the enslaved people she had inherited from her parents. That control only grew when she met Dr. Louis LaLaurie, a French-born physician, 16 years her junior. Now, they had a child out of wedlock, and they married in 1828. Obviously, for that time, having a child out of wedlock.
No bueno.
Yeah. So, some say they married because they were having a kid.
Right.
It was not a happy union. Their marriage quickly turned cold, and the two lived largely apart. Now, in 1831, Madame Lalaurie, now a widow, twice over, and deeply independent, purchased a grand lot at 1140 Royal Street. Placing the property solely in her name, she designed a two-story mansion with sweeping iron balconies and marble floors, right in the heart of the French Quarter. She moved in with her husband, two daughters, and a staff of enslaved servants. To the public, Madame Lalaurie was grace incarnate, a charitable woman, a hostess of elegance. She was seen tending to the sick during the yellow fever outbreaks, donating to the church, and throwing refined parties for the New Orleans Society. Behind those wrought iron balconies, Delphine Lalaurie wielded her power with cruelty that shocked even other slaveholders. And that says a lot.
Yeah.
In Louisiana at the time, laws technically required slave owners to provide food, shelter, and clothing. Which is crazy that it was wild to think that the laws only required food, shelter, and clothing.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I know times were way, way different back then, but just to think that that's all they needed. There's nothing on, like, anything else.
Yeah.
And to top it off, like, they barely enforced those laws.
Shocker.
So, enslaved people were beaten, maimed, and even killed without consequence. Yet, even in the monstrous environment, Delphine's behavior stood out. Whispers began to circulate. Rumors of starvation, mysterious disappearances, and bruised and battered slaves suddenly vanishing from public view. Neighbors began to suspect, but wealth bought silence.
Which is so crazy.
Mm-hmm. It still does.
Literally.
While slavery was legal, brutal, and common in Louisiana during the early 19th century, Lalaurie's treatment of the people she enslaved went beyond brutality and into a horror show. She was a demon disguised as a noblewoman. Madame Delphine Lalaurie's cruelty ran so deep that when her own daughters, children raised inside that house, tried to show some small kindness, they would regret it. They would try to sneak food to enslaved people, offer water and words of comfort, and for that, their mother would beat them. And then came a young 12-year-old slave girl. While she was brushing Madame's hair, she tugged on a knot too hard. Lalaurie, consumed by rage, chased a girl through the mansion. As seen by one neighbor, she raced up the stairs and out onto the balcony, whip in hand. And then, the girl fell. Or, jumped. Witnesses claimed that she chose the fall over whatever punishment Lalaurie had planned.
Which is literally so terrible that she would rather just take the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how you know it was that bad.
Yeah. Her name is lost to time. Her body was hidden, quietly buried. And of course, no charges. But the mask had officially begun to slip. New enslaved people arrived constantly at the mansion, while others simply disappeared. When the police investigated after the girl's death, they found the body and issued a fine. Madame Lalaurie was ordered to relinquish her slaves. She complied, or found a loophole.
Which is crazy that, like, she literally basically killed a girl, and they were like, a fine.
Slap on the wrist.
A fine will do.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yep. So in reality, she orchestrated a deception.
Of course she did.
Using her wealth and family ties to secretly funnel the enslaved people back into her home through friends and relatives, no justice was actually served. She literally just sold the slaves to her family.
Right, and then just bought them back. Right.
Mm-hmm. That is until the morning of April 10th, 1834. The fire started in the kitchen, smoke pouring into the early morning sky. Firemen rushed to help. But when they reached the upper floors, the Lalauries tried to stop them from entering. In fact, Lalaurie was more concerned with rescuing her furniture and other belongings from the flames than anything else. The rescuers ignored them, and they forced open the attic door. When they broke inside, they discovered the cook, a 70-year-old woman, chained to the stove, and she confessed that she had set the blaze, not to escape, but to end her life.
Oh my gosh.
She said she would have rather died than faced another day in that house. She'd been chained there for weeks, beaten, starved, punished for minor mistakes, like too much salt in a dish. And the thing was, now, the fact that she had the fact that she just chained a person to this, mm-hmm. like, to a stove.
Yeah.
And didn't feed them, nope. didn't nothing, just cook for me.
Feed me, but I'm mm-hmm. not gonna feed you.
Feed me and make sure my dishes are right.
Right. It, like, literally makes me sick.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the fact that she, like, it literally was stated that, like, she didn't set that fire to escape. She literally mm-hmm. would, she just wanted out.
Because it said that, now they broke in upstairs.
Yeah.
That attic door. Because it said that once a slave went to the attic,
mm-hmm.
they never were seen again.
Yeah.
So.
It's fucking terrible.
She would rather have set the blaze herself.
Right.
And kill herself than possibly go to the attic.
Mm.
So, in the attic, a contemporary newspaper, The Bee, described the condition of the other slaves that were found as more or less horribly mutilated, suspended by the neck, with limbs apparently stretched and torn from one extremity to the other.
Sick.
Reports go on to describe what they found inside that house was a chamber of horrors. 7 enslaved men and women were chained to the walls, starved, mutilated, and disfigured. Some accounts say one woman had her stomach slit open and her entrails wrapped around her waist.
Sorry, I read that sentence before you said it. Mm-hmm. That, like, really, that really shook me a little bit.
Bodies mutilated beyond recognition, with eyes gouged out.
Oh my gosh.
One man had his limbs stretched and reset to resemble a human crab. Another slave was said to have a hole drilled into his head with a wooden spoon sticking out. It appeared to be an attempt to stir his brains. Another woman had her mouth sewn shut, stuffed with animal excrement.
Oh? Like...
I gave you the warning before we started.
Yeah, that's...
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Now, some other ones I heard... were, along with the person with the spoon,
mm-hmm.
there was another person who had the same hole, but maggots were coming out of it.
Oh my god, Nick.
Mm-hmm. There were collars with spikes on them that wouldn't allow you to put your head down. Because if you put your head down, you didn't pal yourself with the spike.
Like... Mm-hmm.
There's mm-hmm. some said that she would... take a person's tongue, pull it out, sew their mouth shut, and then sew their tongue to their chin. Yep. It was vicious.
Evil. She's mm-hmm. evil.
Evil.
Like, literally evil.
Yes. Other versions of the discovery are less graphic, but all agree what lay behind that attic door was evil.
Mm-hmm.
A cruelty far beyond even the barbarism... accepted by the norms of slaveholding society. The French consul, Armand Salard, later submitted an account to the French Minister of Foreign Affairs. Salard told of his visit to see the sufferers and described their dislocated heads, legs torn by the chains, and bodies streaked with blood from the head to the foot from whiplashes and sharp instruments. Yeah. Mm. It,
like, this is, like, a lot. Like, that's, like, it's, like, literally making me sick.
Mm-hmm. They said when they broke into the room to get them out that the people were actually gagging and throwing up because of the smell, not because of, like, the smoke or the fire right. or anything. And to make it a little worse, after they got them out, they were said to still hear... screams and like sounds of scratching and stuff like that coming from the basement.
Perfect.
But they weren't sure if that was just like other stuff that they were just hearing or whatnot. But British social theorist Harriet Martineau visited New Orleans just years later. She interviewed locals, recorded testimonials, and wrote that some of the enslaved wore iron collars lined with inward-facing spikes to keep them from sleeping or turning their heads. There was no question about what evil had been done in that mansion.
Literally none at all.
But on April 10th, 1834, while the fire was brought under control, a furious mob had gathered. As the news of the atrocities spread and no arrest warrant was issued, the crowd grew violent. They demanded justice.
Period.
Then, they demanded vengeance. The newspaper reported that she had successfully escaped from the hands of justice. So the crowd being just so blown away by the fact that there was no justice, they ended up just attacking and going after the house.
Mm.
They smashed furniture, china, crystal, works of art, wrecked floors, stairs, broke windows, dismantled the iron balconies, and continued their assault on the roof and walls until nearly the whole of the edifice had been pulled down.
It's literally not enough. Like, I don't care. Mm-hmm. Not enough.
But it doesn't matter because LaLaurie was already gone.
Perfect. Perfect.
A carriage burst through the gates, her horses thundering toward a nearby lake. There, she boarded a schooner with her family and fled first to Mobile, then to New York, and then finally to France. She would never return to face judgment. You want to know who was driving that carriage?
Hmm.
One of her slaves.
Are you kidding me?
Nope. And it was said
this woman. Like,
it was said that this slave particularly like was loyal to her.
Well,
he just
didn't, because it gets to a point where it's like Stockholm syndrome.
But
like,
he apparently was always well dressed, well fed.
Yeah, well, that's literally terrible. It's so manipulative. Also,
mm-hmm.
Like, all right, I'll treat you better than I treat everybody else, but you have to be like extremely loyal to me.
Yeah. Well, he was her carriage driver, so he was always seen in public.
Right. Oh, I didn't even think about that. That's insane.
Yep. And with the whole fleeting to like Mobile, Alabama. To Alabama and then to New York, she had to keep fleeing because word just kept spreading. So she had to just keep moving. So she ended up having to leave the country to go to France.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. She made no effort to emancipate any of the enslaved people who had helped her escape, not even the carriage driver. So 19 people remain unaccounted for in the historical record. At the time when slave records were meticulously kept, their disappearance is chilling and likely speaks to the true toll of LaLaurie's brutality. Lewis, deeply unhappy in the marriage and reportedly disgusted by the scandal, left for Havana and never returned. He died in Cuba in 1862.
There is no way that he didn't know that she was doing that.
Now, some people say he was the one doing it, because remember, he was a doctor.
Yeah.
I don't know if I don't remember if we touched it. He was like an early days chiropractor.
Like, you were deeply unhappy in the marriage and reportedly disgusted by the scandal.
Mm-hmm.
The scandal that you lived in the house that was all that was happening with?
Yep.
Get out of here.
Now, LaLaurie's adult children joined her in Paris, but her life there was far from peaceful. She lived in luxury, but had little money. Her son-in-law, Augustine de Lassus, mishandled her estate and failed to send her funds, forcing her to borrow heavily just to stay afloat. She eventually considered returning to New Orleans to fix her finances. Her son, Paulin, who knew her best, was horrified by the idea. He warned that she hadn't changed, hadn't acknowledged the horror of 1834, and that her return would only bring more shame and suffering to the family. He described her nature as indomitable and said she was completely unaware of why she had become a social pariah.
Like, yeah, right.
Now, despite rumors that she was gored to death by a wild boar in 1842, which probably would have been almost just, she actually died in Paris on December 7th, 1849, after having a long illness. She was initially buried in Montmartre Cemetery, but her remains were quietly returned to New Orleans in 1851 and reinterred in St. Louis Cemetery No. 1. Her name does not appear on an official burial records, but the tomb belongs to her son, Paulin Blanquette, making it almost certain she's buried there, hidden in plain sight among the city she once terrorized.
Which is just, like, sick. Like, that's literally, like, why does she get that? Why does she get to be buried there? Like, yeah. No.
What makes it even worse? She died a free woman.
Yep.
And unpunished.
Yep.
But her name, LaLaurie, would become synonymous with cruelty, horror, and the darkest corners of the human soul. Now, if you can handle it, Em, we can go into some of the ghosts that remain there. So, if you're ready, we'll get into some of the ghosts that have been seen there. After the fire, the original LaLaurie Mansion stood in scorched ruins. Though the home was eventually rebuilt into a three-story structure, it never escaped its horrific legacy. The earth beneath it still holds centuries of pain, and some believe the spirits remain bound there, tormented and unwilling to rest. From the moment the smoke cleared, ghost stories began to swirl. Even in the 1850s, after refurbishment, neighbors whispered about cries echoing through the walls, and some claimed to see shadowy figures in the windows. The more gruesome stories are renditions told by Janine Del Lavigne's Haunted House of the Rue Royale in 1946. Delvigine claimed to have come upon her information from old newspaper accounts, interviews, and neighborhood hearsay. Delvigine also declared that when the house was sold, workers went about rebuilding the house. They uncovered numerous human skeletons beneath the house in all sorts of positions, helter-skelter, barely covered with soil. Shreds of fabric still adhering to their bones. Some of the skulls had holes in them.
Yeah, I fully believe it. Like, absolutely.
Yep. As the decades passed, the house changed hands and purpose. In the 1870s, it was divided into apartments. Children reported hearing chains dragging across the floor, scratching beneath the floorboards, and the smell of burning flesh at night.
Oh my gosh.
Their parents brushed it off until one night, a dock worker encountered a towering black man wrapped in chains who vanished into a cold mist after being touched. In 1894, a tenant was brutally murdered in his apartment. His belongings were rifled through, but nothing was stolen. An interesting account regarding this murder deals with the police interviewing neighbors about his disappearance. Days before his death, he confided to a friend that spirits were tormenting him, one who claimed it wouldn't stop until he was dead.
That's crazy.
In the late 1800s, the house became a school for young African-American girls. Students would appear with bruises and scratches, and when they were asked who hurt them, they all gave the same chilling reply: that woman. But these girls were young enough to probably not be aware of Madame LaLaurie and the devastating tragedy some decades earlier. Moreover, it was unlikely that the teachers themselves would tell 6-, 7-, or 8-year-olds about the starvation and immoral torture of slaves some decades before.
Yeah.
One must wonder if the young girls were playing pranks on each other, or if their claims that the phantom woman had scarred them were true. By 1945, the mansion became a bar called the Haunted Saloon. In the 1950s, it turned into a furniture store until the owner witnessed furniture move on its own, and then they shut it down.
That's all it would take for me, too. I'd shut it down, too.
Right? Furniture move? I don't know. In the 60s, it was abandoned and fell prey to vandals. Then in 1969, an artist named Zella Funick lived there briefly. She encountered the spirits, but called them friendly. From 1970 to 2000, it was cut into 20 apartments. Tenants reported ghostly figures, including a man holding his own severed arm, and others bound in chains.
No.
In 2009, actor Nicolas Cage purchased the home. Not long after, He lost the mansion to bankruptcy, and his career began to decline. Locals whispered of the curse of the LaLaurie mansion.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Today, the home is privately owned, but its legend lives on. According to Danelle E. Moeller, chief growth officer at Ghost City Tours, the mansion receives around 400,000 visitors annually through ghost tours. It remains one of the most visited and most haunted places in all of New Orleans.
Which is saying a lot, because there's a lot of activity over there.
There's a ton of activity. Some of the most chilling supernatural encounters include phantom slaves. The most persistent spirits are those of the enslaved. Visitors often hear chains dragging and disembodied cries of pain. Tenant once claimed he was choked by invisible hands in his sleep. Others report shadowy figures flickering in mirrors, vanishing before their eyes.
This is like such a like sad and upsetting place to have mm-hmm. ghosts, because you know it's like the saddest of ghosts. Like they were just so mistreated. Like it's just so upsetting.
Mm-hmm. At night, muffled screams are heard from the upper floors. Sometimes human, sometimes not. The attic, where Delphine's torture chamber once stood, remains the coldest and most feared room in the mansion.
Yeah.
One tenant, an eccentric older man, died just days after moving in. He left behind $10,000 in gold, but his spirit never left the mansion. Witnesses say he still roams the upper halls, searching for his misplaced fortune.
Heck yeah, I would be too. That's a lot in gold.
Right? $10,000?
Yeah.
Yeah. And to whoever found it?
Yeah. Your lucky day.
Mm-hmm. During the Ghost City tour, one guest quietly revealed she was a medium. She had picked up on several things throughout the night, but when they reached the LaLaurie mansion, she froze. "Such sadness," she whispered, then took a photo of the house. Pointing at a bricked-up window, she said, "That's not where the little girl fell." The guide was stunned, because she hadn't mentioned the story of the girl yet. The medium later said that she felt the spirit of a playful boy and a shy girl inside. But when she asked if Madame LaLaurie's presence remained, she simply replied, "No, she doesn't come here anymore." Which is interesting, because some say that Madame LaLaurie is in the attic.
Yeah?
Yeah.
See, I don't know. If I was her, I wouldn't want to be where all the friggin' ghosts and spirits of the people that I brutally mistreated are.
Well, some of the stuff that I was, like, when I was, like, just touching up on some of this, mm-hmm. some of them were saying that, like, she's the reason why a lot of these other people are tied there still.
Yeah.
So, I didn't hear that about the medium.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Even today, the horror of the LaLaurie Mansion continue to ripple across the internet. Reddit is filled with stories from people who claim to have had chilling experiences in or around the infamous home. Some are tourists. Others, like this next person, lived it firsthand. This is the housekeeper's story from R Paranormal. "I was going through a rough patch and took a housekeeping job in downtown New Orleans. The place was stunning. Huge, historic, pure, French Quarter beauty. But the first time I left, I caught a whiff of something awful, like burnt, rotten meat. It came and went, with no clear source. When I returned to clean the second floor, I heard chains dragging. At first, I thought it was from outside, but then I realized it was coming from within the house. The other housekeeper told me just to ignore it. Later that day, I heard a young girl scream, followed by a woman shouting, 'Get in here!' I ran downstairs, terrified again. I was told to keep my mouth shut. This pattern continued for weeks. Chains, screams, terrible smell. One day, I saw a tall, dark man with chains around his neck. That was it. I quit, without saying a word. Years later, during a ghost tour in New Orleans, I recognized the house. I had been working inside the LaLaurie mansion and never knew it." This story matches other reports. The smell of death, the dragging chains, the disembodied screams. What makes this account especially eerie is that the storyteller had no idea what kind of house she was working in until years later. Whether that's true or not is what's up for debate.
Also, like, the other person, like, telling them just, like, to calm down and, like, to ignore it is also crazy because, like, did they know where they were working? Mm-hmm. Like, did they know where they were at in the history? That's crazy.
They probably ended up finding out, or yeah, they probably ended up knowing, and they were just like, just don't say anything. It's just not worth it.
No, I literally don't even... the immediate... That was it. I quit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, I would quit, too.
Yeah.
Especially saying something like that. Like, mm-hmm, that's... It's absolutely insane.
Over the years, the horrors of the La Lorraine Mansion have been twisted into legend, and like all enduring ghost stories, some details have been exaggerated, distorted, or completely fabricated.
Of course.
So we're going to go through a quick little myth and reality, little bit. So myth, Madame La Lorraine bathed in blood to preserve her youth. Reality, there is no historical evidence of this. The bloodbath imagery is borrowed from Elizabeth Bethany Bathory lore and is folded into La Lorraine's story much later, like after her revival in pop culture.
Yeah.
Myth. Hundreds of bodies were discovered in the mansion. Reality. Contemporary reports speak of 7 tortured enslaved people found in the attic, some mutilated, others barely alive. No credible records confirm mass graves or hundreds of remains. These larger numbers are rooted more in ghost tours than in verified history.
Yeah. They want to play it up, like, yeah, especially.
Myth. Every gruesome detail is historically accurate. Reality. Much of what we know, air bunnies, about La Lorraine comes from Janine Delvigne's 1946 book, The Haunted House of the Rue Royale, which combine rumors, interviews, and folklore. For example, the tale of the skeletons discovered decades later beneath the house likely draws from Renovation-era ghost stories, not archival records.
Yeah.
Still, to the core, though, the truth remains that Madame La Lorraine was a woman of immense cruelty, and what happened inside her Royal Street mansion was horrifying. But even horror has history. And sometimes that history becomes even darker when fiction blurs the edges.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah. This is why I know this person.
Mm-hmm. So in 2013, for all of you who watch AHS or American Horror Story, Coven reintroduced Madame Delphine La Lorraine to the global audience. Played by Kathy Bates.
I love Kathy Bates.
La Lorraine was portrayed as a blood-obsessed socialite who tortured slaves to preserve her youth. The series also paired her with legendary voodoo queen Marie Levenu and exposed a fictional twist, since the two women never crossed paths in real life. Though wildly inaccurate, the show revived public interest in both women, cementing La Lorraine as a pop culture villain. Why she likely never bathed in blood and certainly never shared a scene with La Lorraine, AHS made sure her legacy of horror reached a new generation, turning the La Lorraine Mansion from a local legend into a global icon of macabre.
I can say I love American Horror Story. Like, I've seen most of the seasons. Coven is one of the best well-done seasons. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely interesting.
Yeah.
And she's definitely evil.
Yeah. I'll have to watch it. Yeah, I've never seen it.
That season's mm-hmm. definitely really good. Kathy Bates is literally awesome. She plays her amazingly.
So today, the mansion is privately owned, but it remains a major stop on ghost tours throughout New Orleans. Guides lower their voices when they approach the gates. Guests often refuse to go near the windows. If you ever find yourself on Royal Street, stop for a moment. Look up at the grand iron balconies and feel the air shift. But don't linger too long. The La Lorraine Mansion does not like visitors. So.
That was a doozy.
Right?
That is.
There's.
Crazy.
So there's another side lore about this stuff that I heard. And I was actually, when I listened to, like, when this podcast came up, because I obviously for each podcast, for each episode, I'll make a list of podcasts. So
yeah, so you're
I'm fresh and constantly kind of like thinking of it, and this way I have like the little things in and out, little like other facts. So it's also said that La Larrey took care of, I think they were calling it the Devil Baby. Now it's going to get fuzzy and stuff, and it might not be like totally like
accurate.
Yeah, but apparently some like, I think it was like some voodoo witch, not the one that we talked about. But she had a baby, and it was the Antichrist, or Son of the Devil.
Yeah.
And long story short, somehow it ended up in Madame Lalaurie's hands, and she tortured it along with her slaves.
Oh, perfect.
And for a while, in like the 1800s, people would, it said, to carve gourds and stuff. Like, you know what I'm talking about, gourd-wise.
Yeah.
To look like the Devil Baby, to keep it away from attacking them.
Dang.
Yeah, so that was like a side, I was like, whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Like, I thought I was like, I thought I clicked on like a wrong thing.
Right.
And then it like tied back into all this, and I was like, whoa, I'd never heard that before. That's crazy. I don't even know where they pulled that from. That could be completely fake. Yeah. But
I mean, shit, it's crazy to think about.
So I hope you guys enjoyed that episode.
It was very informational. Like I said,
it was definitely gruesome. We tried, and I wouldn't say we tried to stay light on it, but it's not like, it's not too late. You can't really get too late with that.
There's no way to be light. It's heavy.
I have to credit this episode to Sam.
Yeah.
Sam wrote this one fully out.
Very good job.
Yeah, she's been doing a bunch of the episodes.
I can't wait to post these pictures too, because the pictures, like the original, like
she absolutely kills it with everything.
Yeah.
She has her own podcast. You can go listen at Scare Me Sam. She reviews horror and thriller books if you are looking for one. She also has a website, scaremesam.com, where you can go and check out her blog and see some of the stuff she posts about. There is a contact on there, so if you wanted to get into contact with her, you can also go and follow us on our social medias.
The Ominous Archives.
Or if you have been to the mansion.
Yeah.
Or if you just have your own spooky story, email us at
ominousarchives@gmail.com.
All right, guys, we are getting out of here. I am losing my voice.
Nick needs new contacts. He needs to take his contacts out. Yeah,
my contacts have to come out. Don't forget to come back next week as we dive into more strange and haunted stories in the Ominous Archives. See ya.
See ya.